Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/Saint14Project and browse the unmatched selection of over 300,000 audio programs. Download a free title of your choosing on almost any internet-connected device and start listening. It's just that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/Saint14Project.
Welcome everyone to the Saint 14 Project podcast. I'm Sentinel Dad, also known as Alex, one of your hosts, and with me this week is Dr. Goku and Average Joe. What's up, dudes?
What's up, buddy?
Much, man. You guys been keeping busy? Staying out of trouble?
Yeah.
Trying my best.
Just came back from a small little vacation where we got hit by what almost looked like a damn tornado.
That would have been something. Tornado in Canada.
Yeah.
Right. Did sheep did, and maple leaves everywhere? No.
Did Felix enjoy it?
Oh, he was
storm and whatnot.
Oh, he was enjoying it like a little guy. He just wanted to go outside and play in the rain.
Oh, you brought him with you? I thought it was just like mom and dad getaway.
No, it was a family thing.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we are not alone this week. As with most weeks, with us, we have an amazing supporter of the project, a streamer for Planet Destiny. I know he's streamed for StackUp.org, very involved over there as well. Our buddy Jopa writes us a year. What's up, dude?
Not a whole lot. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. It was I think Joe and I were shocked that we hadn't had you on yet.
Dude, it felt like we did.
No, because Joe's like, when was Joe Barrett's on? I was like, oh, I don't know. And so I open up our shared document on our online resources, and I'm looking. I was like, son of a bitch, he's never been on.
Yeah, it happens, honestly, with the amount of episodes you guys put out. It's there's always going to be some times where you can't get everyone on right away, but I'm glad this episode's going to be a banger, so it'll be fun.
Oh, totally. Very excited. Now, for those that don't know you, don't know what you're about, you tell everyone a little bit about yourself, what you stream, and like where your passions are and stuff like that.
So I stream a lot of looter shooters, Destiny, Borderlands, that kind of thing. Also a little bit of Apex Legends. Most of the time, it's co-op and with friends. That's where I kind of thrive. I love gaming with my buds. And so that's mostly what I do. I'm a veteran, so you mentioned StackUp. That's a big part of why I stream. I think raising awareness for things like that, Project Guardians, everything that is going on in the gaming world and all the positivity, I think is something that I really care about a lot. So.
Awesome, yeah, and I think when I first got to know you, I was like, oh, hey, you should hook up with my buddy Chris Case, also known as Cuddles, and you're like, dude, I already know this guy.
Yeah, very familiar with Cuddles. Yeah. He actually lives not far from
you. Yeah, he lives pretty close to you, I think, down there in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, again, super excited to have you here. A little bit of show summary this week. We're going to be talking about a little bit of a different topic, courtesy of Joe. It's a great idea. We're going to kind of talk about edutainment and what it is and how that intertwines with mental health and mental health awareness. And I know we haven't done like character analysis poll in a while. Good Lord. But we've kind of been shooting from the hip a little bit, and Dr. Goku's going to be doing an awesome analysis, very rightly so, on Captain Canuck.
A very lesser known character, but Canadian symbol and icon.
He's like Alex Trebek. No, I'm just kidding. But before we jump into all that, what have we all been playing this week? Jopo, what you been playing lately?
So I was finishing my Solstice gear grind on Destiny 2. I've done a lot of that, and then also a bit of Apex Legends, but those are the two that I've primarily been playing. The Solstice grind is real, and I knocked one armor out, and I'm almost through the other two, so pretty excited about that.
Jeez. Awesome. I'm like living on that console or what?
A little bit.
Man, I'm seeing everybody run through, and it's like, whew, three characters done. Time to move on to the next, you know, from Xbox to PlayStation or whatnot. It's like, how are you doing it so fast? Like, I still haven't knocked out my first armor yet. I'm super jealous.
It definitely helps to run through with a team. Like, you can kind of coordinate and get things done significantly faster if you have a fire team to run with. So,
other Joe, what you been playing?
Destiny, really. I haven't been doing much of anything else. Solstice came out. DAZ's interesting. I like it. I did the glitch, got into the bottom room with the cat, and I've been distracted with getting my Solstice armor done. I actually be playing for a little bit, and then, well, let's go into a raid. Because somebody never did Leviathan before, so we do a Leviathan. Doesn't count towards anything. Let's go do this. That doesn't count towards anything. It's like, well, it's been fun, but I've been having a blast with it. The game feels really good right now, so I'm enjoying it. I'm going to enjoy it even more because all you suckers who have already ran through your Solstice armor and had to bear through the 100 mini-bosses, I will skate by with just 50.
I guess that's the thing I struggle with picking it back up. Is that I feel like I would be like holding people back from doing the stuff that they wanted, that they would be able to do, to keep up with Solstice and stuff like that. So I've been like hesitating about getting back into it because I don't want to like hold people back from doing the actual stuff that they want to do for their gear sets and whatnot. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. Should be fine. I mean, you can get it at any level, so you can just progress along with everybody else same time.
And it's not too bad in terms of what you have to do. You kind of have to kind of pick and choose, but you can kind of work your way through things as you go. I just started mine on Monday, since I hadn't touched Destiny since I started playing Spider-Man. But just starting to kind of get back into it after finishing, platinuming, and completing all the DLC for Spider-Man on PS4. I'm a year late, but it was amazing.
Nice.
Dude. That's a great game.
Yeah. I think it is on sale right now.
It is on sale for the summer sale.
Nice.
I highly encourage people getting it.
So that's what you've been doing lately? Spider-Man and a little bit of D2?
Yeah. Mainly I was playing Spider-Man. Just because it was such an amazing game, and I just wanted to get through it. It's a lot longer than I thought it would be.
Right.
And I'm a completionist, so I had to get everything off the map and checked off before doing the story.
Nice. You sound like Dave when he got the platinum for Horizon Zero Dawn.
It took me a while to get that one, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been playing GTA 5 and GTA Online here and there. I've been dipping back into Battlefield Hardline, which is like one of my first loves in PlayStation 4. And it's still like populated. And actually, since Battlefield 5 has kind of fallen off with the playership, it has increased over there on Hardline, and it's been a lot of fun. I have a few people that I know that also play it, but all of us are in different countries. Like, one of them's in England, one guy's in Wales, two guys in France, there's a guy in Turkey. So, like, the only time where we all can kind of sync up at a somewhat appropriate time is on the weekends. So we had some fun this past weekend, which is really cool. I hadn't played with these people in a long time. And
it's kind of sad that BF5 didn't turn out to be what everyone hoped it would be.
Yeah, they just, I don't know.
They're kind of fumbling with it. I've been seeing the new stuff for Modern Warfare that's looking really good.
Yeah, well, I mean, I rolled into a BF5 match with some people I play BF1 with a lot, and we it's okay. Like the new map they opened up is pretty good, but yeah, I agree. It's just not in that spot. Like I'll have more fun in BF4.
To me, the last Battlefield that really got me was BF3.
Yeah, well, yeah, a lot of people. But speaking of, another game I've been playing lately on PC is Bad Company 2. It was like, I think it's $4.99 on Steam right now. So,
Bad Company 2 is good.
In like, it has a really good campaign too. Most people don't realize.
Come on, Dice, make a Bad Company 3.
Yeah, and I did. So I was playing Hardline. I streamed Hardline. Battlefield Hardline this past week, and we had just been like talking about stuff. Like they would see all the stuff I have on my PlayStation, and we were like comparing who has the most games out of people in chat. And one of them is like, "What the hell is Cat Lateral Damage?" So I streamed some Cat Lateral Damage, which I've talked about before. So I'll have to send you guys the link so you can see it.
Cat Lateral Damage.
Yeah, you're a cat, and you knock crap off the counter. It's like really relaxing. It's a lot of fun. Like there's one.
Oh my god, there's some VR of it.
Yeah, there probably is. But yeah, it was like $1.99 on the PlayStation Store a couple years ago, and my daughter saw it. Like, is that a cat game? I was like, yeah, it looks like a cat game. She goes, is that going to be our cat game? I said, well, I guess so. When you look at me like that,
the premier first person destructive. Cats.
Yes, they have a VR version.
Plays my god. Cooped up house cat and knock stuff on the floor.
It's pretty good. And like I said, it's pretty enjoyable. I have not done VR. Well, with that, why don't we can kind of move along to our mental health topic this week, which should be interesting. I'm really interested in this. So Goku, take it away.
So you and Joe mentioned that edutainment would be a interesting topic to kind of talk about. So rather than going so in-depth and clinical as I typically do with these mental health topics, this one's a more lighthearted version. So edutainment is defined as a way to encourage learning by using entertainment and communication skills so the learner can have a better understanding or a way to illustrate a point. And it's something that is been going on for a while. It's something that's kind of catching on into more into the school systems where you need to kind of entertain the kids a little bit more to kind of keep the attention. But on more complex topics, it'll help simplify things for a lot of people. Kind of goes back to Carl Sagan's Cosmos. I don't know if you guys had watched that back way back when. And then they had the reimagining with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And then going to Bill Nye the Science Guy. That was another form of edutainment, which is taking scientific concepts, making it more easily digestible and understandable for a lot of people. When it comes to mental health, there's a lot of people that are online on, not necessarily on Twitch, but on YouTube, on Twitter, that do more edutainment aspects in a way to give more information. The people that I like to suggest and I like to watch myself is Dr. Ali Matu that has the Psych Show. There's Katie Morton, which is really good as well. Dr. Scarlett has her own series of videos. There's Psych2Go. There's one by one of the Green Brothers as well, has a show as well. And it's ways to explain concepts that is not just reading from a textbook that I did for too many years. I wish I had some of those YouTube shows way back when. I don't know if any of you guys had seen any of the people that I mentioned or watched any of their videos.
I was a big Bill Nye fan.
Yeah, I've been following Neil deGrasse for a while on his Cosmo show, but as far as the YouTube videos, I haven't. However, I do watch a lot of the test YouTube videos where they try to will it shoot through like a bullet through a sand pit or a sand stack or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So I find those videos a lot of fun to kind of test different theories and everything in more of a lighthearted way. So yeah, I really enjoy stuff like that quite a bit.
Yeah, the Green Brothers is SciShow Psych. All of the people that I mentioned are really well produced, and they have a lot of good information. And they have a wide variety of videos on, where it be information on specific diagnoses, on specific treatment methods, on specific tools, on medication. Chances are they've made a video about something someone would be interested in. And it's kind of the form of the way I wanted to do some of the videos I have planned. I just need to find the time to do them. But it's a way to be more relatable rather than just being a professor and doing a speech in front of a class.
Yeah, I like the engagement level of it. I mean, it's... I think when you watch these videos, it breaks it down to be easier to digest. You can see firsthand. Just like Jopa was saying, you know, they're breaking down like... theories and various other things, and it's easy to follow and you can retain it because it's a form of entertainment. So your attention, you're focused in on it, your attention's on it, and you're digesting it a lot easier. At least I find it more engaging, at least.
And the form of entertainment, they're not going to go so in depth as, let's say, a university class, because that's not the point of what they're doing. They're giving you the bigger points, they're giving you the bigger features about what you need to know without boring you with 50 or 60 years of research on a topic. There's right. also a couple of podcasts that are pretty interesting as well. Two of them that I listen to that are really interesting, well, three of them, is Popcorn Psychology, Capes on the Couch, and a new one that I just discovered called Freudian Slips. Freudian Sips.
Yeah, I've been listening to the Jedi Council podcast, and there's some great people over there. Just shout out to one of the co-hosts there, Brandon Sexton. He just got his PhD.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, one of my favorite YouTube still, I listen to some podcasts, but it's mostly the Destiny related. But on YouTube, I do watch Sports Science a lot. I'm a big sports guy, and watching them break down like the science of the different athletes and stuff is super fascinating to me, because a lot of it you don't realize when it's coming down. It's all about angles and math and stuff that you would never have really thought about when you're just playing pickup basketball. But then as they're breaking down like the millimeter difference it means between a shot going in, a shot going out, or for an athlete doing a certain thing, that's super fascinating to me. So it kind of brings in a couple of my passions, which is like sports, and then also the science aspect, which I think is super important. And the whole key behind edutainment, in my opinion, is to get the person interested, because having kids myself, the hardest thing to do is get them to pay attention when you're doing something that they find boring. So switching that around and getting something that they'll get excited about, that they're really kind of passionate about, I think is super important. And that's why I think edutainment is kind of on the rise in the world. So,
and you get them engaged, and you get them talking about a topic that they may not have thought of, or they may not have necessarily had an interest in or known much about. And you just give enough information that you open up the door to a greater conversation or a YouTube rabbit hole. And using some of these videos, it's something that I use in my own practice in terms of helping clients see another way to understand a concept. Because the way I explain a concept may not be the same way another therapist explained the same concept. It's the exact same definition, but we all have our specific styles. So having multiple ways of understanding the same thing helps them better grasp and see specific criteria.
So what are the metrics for like measuring the effects of edutainment on adolescents?
I don't know if there's many.
Or is that something that's just hard to gauge?
It's hard to gauge, but I think they measure it in terms of, certainly on YouTube, is retention. I know YouTube offers the metric of how long on average people watch the video for. So if they stopped after 2 of the 5 minutes, or if they watched the entire way through.
Right.
So the more you get people to watch the entirety of it, the more engaged they are. Or the more they fell asleep, but you hope that's not the case.
Yeah, I made it to the end of the video. Oh, what'd you get from it? About 15 minutes of sleep.
Yeah, I feel like that's a difficult thing to do, obviously, is that keeping someone engaged, but also having them, like you said, retention is such a huge thing, because oftentimes you can have somebody read, read a book, and then have them repeat it back, or even watch a video that they really enjoyed, and they were entertained in the time, but have them regurgitate that information is almost impossible. So catching them and allowing them to actually retain that information is such a huge key, and it's still, I think, such a difficult thing to do.
Well, a good example of that is a while back when I was at work, so not when I was a therapist, when I used to work at another job, it was really boring and monotonous. So what I would do is throw on some audiobooks just to pass the time. And I had already read the Harry Potter books, but I listened to the audiobook version of the Harry Potter books. And they were narrated by, I believe they were by Stephen Fry, and I think there's another version by Jim Dale. And it just completely changed the way I read and remembered the book. It's not just someone just reading the book in a monotone voice. They have expression. They're making voices, characters, interacting. And I think this is where we need to take education, because education in and itself hasn't changed. The classroom hasn't changed in 150-odd years. But society and kids have changed.
There's a lot of long-distance learning rooms now. And nowadays in school and just institutions like in universities and everything are starting to incorporate, you know, modern technologies and, you know, streaming. And, you know, you can go to college completely online now.
Yep. My goddaughter, she is eight, I think. And her class had iPads.
Yeah.
And I remember a few years back, Apple released an application called iBook Author, which is just an app you can get on your Mac, and you can create what's called an iBook. So you can create a book, but you can insert video, you can insert diagrams, interactive elements within that particular book. So you're reading about space, and they show you, oh, this is Jupiter. And then you have a 3D model of Jupiter that's rotating.
Hmm.
That'll catch a child's attention and their imagination a lot more than just showing them a static image.
Yep. See, that plays back to what I was saying is when I said on how it grabs my attention, the more entertaining they make it, like Bill Nye. He wasn't the most animated person, but he had a lot of color and there's a lot of things going on, and he was able to keep your attention while he was breaking down something scientific.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think also, like, he kind of did, though they were vastly different on what they were trying to do with Mr. Rogers. He just knew, he knew how to talk. They both knew how to talk to their audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a certain way of, like, matching their attention span to what they're trying to talk about. And, like, using certain tonal strategies to grab your attention in the right specific moments.
Because I'm sure we all had a teacher or a professor that was just monotone and boring that you almost fell asleep in a class. Yeah. They weren't very engaging. And we've all had those professors or teachers that were dynamic, interesting, where you wanted to go to class because you wanted to see what was going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's something that oftentimes is missed with educators and with also anyone creating an education type show, is you don't have to be flamboyant, you don't have to be out there like as Mr. Rogers, as Bill Nye proved, but you kind of have to constantly be going and constantly keep that attention, because what ends up happening is, I know my kids had iPads in school, and even if you took away all of their programs, like their games and stuff, and blocked them off from the iPad, if they found something to distract themselves because whatever they were doing wasn't keeping their attention, they'd be off. And they'd be doing something else almost immediately. So having someone that captivates them is so important. And it's, I feel like, oftentimes overlooked when we're looking at teachers or educators.
And there's a different way of looking at it as well, because I know there's the perspective of people saying, well, kids shouldn't have these distractions, or we shouldn't need to do all of this because kids can no longer pay attention like we used to. But times have changed. And why do we want to keep a model that's really outdated, that's been, like I mentioned, 150 year or plus old? The classroom, is since its conception, has not changed. It's a teacher in front of a row of desks sitting with a bunch of students. Make it more dynamic. We have advancements in technology. We have screens. We have meeting boards. We have VR and AR coming along. Use those tools to engage and have kids learn in a different way.
Yeah, I picture a teacher integrating some, like, astronomy is a perfect example. Imagine, like, a complex kind of view of the solar system on the ceiling of the classroom that's rotating and moving, and then you learn the relation, how far the different planets are from each other, how quickly they're moving, all that kind of stuff. Just stuff, something that I don't think would be very challenging with the technology we have, but would allow the kids to really stay focused and be like, wow, this is, learning is something that they're excited about. And like you said, unfortunately, I think people are afraid of change and afraid to update the things that have kind of been done the way they've been done for so long. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's truly unfortunate, because we live in a time where we could do so much more.
It's kind of opening up another discussion in terms of budgets and how funds are allocated. But the way I envision a classroom, like you mentioned, Jopa, is almost like a way we view it in science fiction, with the holograms where people can see and interact and not just sit in a desk, open a book, and read words on the page.
Now, as far as, like, physical, like, edutainment. What about Legos? How would Legos fit into that? Because that's hands-on problem solving, you know, seeing what pieces fit together, trying to make a model of Lord Shaxx from Destiny, and trying to figure it out from all the pieces. You're having fun while doing it, but you're also problem solving.
Yeah. Yep. Well, it's the whole Minecraft debate that people had. Mentioned a while ago that Minecraft just announced, what was it, Minecraft World, which is their AR version of Minecraft. To me, it sounds like a amazing idea where kids can just be creative. And some of the things that people create with Minecraft are incredible. Someone made a working computer in Minecraft.
Stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No way. How is that even possible in Minecraft?
I don't know how they did it, but they did.
Damn it, you should know this. No.
The funny thing is that introducing this is not exactly new, especially with edutainment. Like, I know when I was in school, I played Oregon Trail, I played SimCity, and these older games that were somewhat educational but did teach me stuff. Like, I know SimCity, you had to deal with taxes, you had to deal with managing population, you had to deal with all kinds of stuff. And it feels like at times we've almost regressed to where they don't allow stuff like that, outside the box thinking, in games or whatever the entertainment might be, in the classroom. And that's something I like. Minecraft might not be a bad thing to have for like an hour a week for kids, to be like, hey, learn to do this, this, and this. And like, imagine if our kids were learning, growing up learning like coding and stuff like that, that's super important, just through the edutainment kind of system.
Well, a good example, couple years ago, Apple released what's called the Swift language, which is a new way or a new computer language that they're using for apps. And they developed what's called Swift Playground, which is a children's game where you play by coding. So you learn how to code to do things in the game.
I see that more and more these days. I think the first time I saw it was around Christmas time. You could buy, I think it was the co-founder of Apple.
Wozniak?
Wozniak, the great Woz.
The Woz.
Helped develop a coding game for kids to get into it. And that's fantastic. I mean, it's, you know, with all the computers and everything these days, knowing how to code.
It's kind of how the world's going to go.
Mm-hmm. So getting them at an early age and making it entertaining and fun, and you get to create something right there, and it's, they give you all the building blocks and everything, and make it easy to digest so you know what you're doing. Even though it's, I don't want to say dumbed down, but it's broke down so much to make it achievable and not seem overwhelming. But then fast forward a couple years and you're in that situation where you have to code something for, you know, full on a, you know, PC or whatever. And it's like, oh, wait, I remember how to do this. We used to have this game. Da, da, da. Oh, look at that. It works still. Okay. Da, da, da. And they're off to the races.
Because I know when at kids, Walmart, Best Buy, that kind of thing, they have build your own robots, build your own, and then you program the robot to move and function, build your own, like, basically mini computers, stuff like that as well, that I think I'm a big proponent of. I've gotten them for my kids because I feel like it's super important to learn these skills that will, even if they don't become coders or actually do it with their job, it's useful to know going forward for sure.
You're showing us all up.
One thing I remember when I was a kid, everyone was excited when it was the time to go to the computer lab. Yes, back in the day, we had the computer labs for younger listeners. And people were excited just because we were going to go play games, but that you were learning things. So you were doing math. You were solving equations and problem-solving things to advance.
Yeah, and what's funny about that is that, you know, as I'm a child of the late 80s and early 90s, you know, the old, like, DOS system was called Prodigy that we used for that. And I know this because my daughter's in fourth grade now, and, like, they have sign-in to Prodigy. That is, Prodigy is still around, and they, like, she gets, like, extra points in her class for doing, like, extra assignments over the internet. Prodigy is still a thing.
Really?
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Now, here's a question. What are your thoughts on games nowadays having a certain level of edutainment within them with the problem and puzzle solving? Like how in Destiny you have the jumping puzzles, you have to have six people, everybody's got to line up just perfectly and this and that. It's making you think.
Oh, no, I love it. Like my...
Like the old Tomb Raiders, you know?
My 9-year-old does that, like watching me, and she'll also play it herself, playing Uncharted and Tomb Raider and stuff right. like that. Loves it. And it, you know what, that has a critical thinking aspect in it, and like trying to think outside the box.
Yeah. As I'm a longtime RPG fan, and RPGs almost always have some kind of puzzles within them, as far as you have to solve this. It's got certain letters or characters that you got to solve. It's got how you use your characters in tandem. And I completely agree that, especially in gaming, that it teaches you to think outside the box and to be creative. And I think that creative thinking is super important as you're learning to kind of not just learn inside like this bubble that you kind of I think a lot of people get stuck in.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think the big takeaway from this discussion is to not be afraid of new technology and what it can bring. To look where we are at and where we're trying to go and not really hold on to the old method.
True.
Not saying that the old method is necessarily bad. Example, reading a book. I highly recommend people go reading a book. But having a book that has some enhancements with it, I don't necessarily see a problem with that if it's keeping the person engaged or getting them to read from the get-go. Example, a lot of people knocked comic books back in the day in terms of, oh, it's not really reading. While it's still reading, it may not be a 300-page novel, but it's still reading.
Yeah, you'll definitely see that... More than likely, the folks that read comic books are better, more creative readers now than they might have been otherwise. Because getting somebody to sit down and just read a simple book is difficult when they don't do it often. But you give them the comics as almost like a gateway into reading more. And I know that was something that got me. I was an avid reader for a long time, and comics and those types of books were my gateway towards that, and I thought it was a great step from one to continue down that path. And once I found that, oh, I actually do enjoy reading. I don't always need the pictures to accompany it, but sometimes I do like to have the visual novel effect.
Well, yeah, someone in our chat had mentioned, Grey Jedi had mentioned that, you know, like he had read an article about Stan Lee in which he said that he used larger outside-of-the-box words on purpose so to force kids to look up words in a dictionary, which is awesome.
It's genius.
Yeah.
I think nowadays the platforms that we have just really opens up the door for bringing out this form of education in an interactive or engaging way more than we did 10 years ago. I mean, with YouTube and Twitch and Mixer and every other platform that's out there or being developed, they're all going to have an aspect somewhere where it's going to be entertaining, but you're also going to be learning how to do something at the same time.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, I tagged you guys in the chat, in our chat. There's a YouTube channel called The Psych Show.
Yeah, and Ali Matu.
Yep, clinical psychologist who break down various different topics and subjects and make it really easy to understand and digest. I absolutely love it. I think it's great.
Katie Morton is another really good one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. That one. Actually, the author escapes me, but Chicken Fingers actually had a really good one. This author does a lot of YouTube videos and videos on her website helping people understand. It's going to drive me insane if I can't.
One thing I would suggest is for people to seek out some of those forms of entertainment or edutainment on topics they're interested in or things that they just want to know more on.
And a lot of times, you know, when you, like, if you have an Amazon account, like, you'll see a lot of this stuff is for free too. So, like, more often than not, you won't have to spend a dime on it. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of databases online that are completely free as well.
Yep.
So just, you know, do your research on it. And if that's something you're interested in, just, you know, trying to take a look at a different avenue for learning something, you know, you can check it out.
The YouTube platform is so good where anytime I want to do a project or have a question about something in my house or about a piece of technology that may not be working right, first thing I do is Google and YouTube.
Oh, yeah. How funny is it is that you use Google as a non-proper verb.
Yeah.
You're Googling in YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, I do the same thing. Like, that's how I learned, like, you know, how to fix something in my Jeep or something like that. Yeah.
So this is not working. Someone must have had a similar problem and put a video on it, and you see exactly what you need to do, and then you can do it yourself.
Well, thank you, Dr. Goku. That was awesome. Like I said, very kind of a different topic for us. I enjoyed it. But let's move on to some gaming news on a more solemn note. You know, we want to talk about, like, some of the response from some of the politicians in the United States about the recent terrible acts of violence and the shootings in Dayton, Ohio, and El Paso, Texas, which our hearts go out to all those affected by it, the victims, their families, and the extended communities. But as with every violent act like that in the United States over every presidency, video games end up getting blamed one way or another. You know, it's been going on primarily since 1999, since Columbine.
Yeah, around Columbine, or even before then when Mortal Kombat came out.
Yeah, but I think Columbine was the big catalyst, especially around this topic, is when people really started talking about it. But I mean, it just, you know, and, you know, there was another former politician who, you know, in response to other politicians saying something that, you know, other countries have play video games and this doesn't happen there. So, I mean, it's not the, I mean, I can't stress enough that, like, the video games aren't to blame for this.
Yeah.
So firstly, my heart goes out to the families of the people affected, but I'm just going to say that the science shows that video games do not increase violent behavior. The science is showing.
Well, it's the same with vaccines and autism.
That's been debunked so many times.
Exactly.
But people will believe what they want to believe, and it has their own agendas, unfortunately.
Yeah. Joe, what's your take on all this?
Well, I agree. I was actually going to mention the fact the guns, video games exist in other countries, and but they don't have near the amount of mass shootings that we do here. And I think the biggest problem whenever I see this kind of news cycle hit is that there's so much misinformation. There was one of the politicians who said something along the lines of Japan doesn't have video games. And I audibly laughed at that.
Japan has the
biggest video game market.
Literally created Sony is operated there. Just an absurd statement, but that's unfortunately what happens.
Have they heard of a thing called Nintendo?
Oh my God. So that's my biggest issue with it, is oftentimes people will look for scapegoats instead of looking for actual answers. So, and that's really what ends up happening is video games, because there's violence in them, they're an easy target. But oddly enough, you don't see those same politicians target violent movies or violent TV shows. It goes back to video games because most of them don't play them. While they do watch TV, they do watch movies. So it's an easy finger to point at something they don't know anything about. And when someone mentions Fortnite, especially as a violent video game...
Of all things, it's so cartoony.
That's really where I feel like you can tell the lack of knowledge that these people have means they're just totally incredible. And that's really the takeaway for me, is that you have people in positions of power who know nothing about that which they're speaking, and that's a real shame.
So one thing that a lot of people mention, and you mentioned the Columbine shooter, but if you look at the Virginia Tech or Sandy Hook shooters, they also blamed video games at that time. But there were studies and there were investigations that led to kind of showing what types of games those people played. So I'm not going to name the names of the shooters because I don't want to glorify what they did. But the Virginia Tech shooter was a fan of Sonic the Hedgehog, while the Sandy Hook shooter did play first-person shooters. He was also a avid fan of DDR, Dance Dance Revolution.
I don't know. It blows my mind whenever something happens like this. It might not be immediately, but not too far after the fact. Video games always comes up.
And I know Angry Joe and Adam Sessler were interviewed regarding what happened. I don't know if you guys know who Angry Joe is.
Yeah.
As a big YouTuber, and he illustrated the point where other countries in the world play just as much or more video games than the U.S. does. But it's mass shootings is not a problem in those countries.
Yeah. I feel like one of the major issues is that anytime something like this happens, it's a complex issue, right? Mm-hmm. But everyone wants to dumb it down to a singular reason that we've gotten to this place, right? And ultimately, at the end of the day, there's layers and there's many reasons. It's not just like one thing or another. But when you can look at something like video games and show a violent video game on the news broadcast that you're hosting, right? And then you have a bunch of older folks in suits who've never played video games. It's an easy correlation for them to look at it and be like, well, this makes sense because this is violent, that was violent, problem solved.
Early 80s, it was violent action movie. In the 60s, it was rock and roll. Or was that the 50s?
I think it was both.
No, I get it. It's so easy to point the finger at that industry, but they always point out the negative side of it. They pick one aspect of it and that's it. But they don't. There's so much positive that comes from the video game industry that helps so many people in a positive way that it just gets overshadowed by a tragedy.
Yeah. But that's our news cycle in this country in general, right? Is that the negativity will get all the shine and the positivity. Like, look at, I mean, obviously we had, we're all very familiar with Guardian Con and know
right.
the amount of money that they raised. Barely a blip. Like, I know it was on my local TV just because it's kind of started here, local news. But, I mean, it didn't make national news at all. And yeah, there's so many things. I mean, over the course of a couple months there, I think between that and then I think it's Gaming Does Good or something like that, they raised, or the Speedrun Gamers raised another $3 million. So it was like $7 million raised combined in the span of like 2 months.
Yeah, you're right. Which that was Gaming for Good.
It's crazy to think about in this grand scheme of things. But again, that's never going to get the publicity. You look at it, if a billionaire is giving away a bunch of money to charity, nobody cares unless that billionaire now gets caught doing something they're not supposed to be doing. Now that makes news, but not, you know what I'm saying? Of the good that they do. And that's, I think, the most unfortunate thing. But that probably is what encourages these people a little bit, is that they know that no matter how much good they do, they'll never get the fame they look for. So this is the way they can do it.
Yeah. Sadly, it's just a fact of the matter, unfortunately. But again, our hearts go out to all those affected. Mm-hmm. Moving along, so Ninja moved to Mixer.
How big was that paycheck?
That's exactly the first thing I said. Like, I want to know how much they paid him to do it, or incentivized him to do it.
Someone made it, kind of did a quick aspect of the math in terms of how many subscribers he had on Twitter, on Twitch, and the mm-hmm. income, and how much it was about $5 to $10 million just to have him move. And he hadn't even started streaming, and he was up to what, 1 million subscribers?
Not that yet. I think it was like 200,000.
No, he hit 1 million this week, and the reason for that was, yeah, but that was not before. But they gave away free subscriptions, but it's a genius marketing move because you sign up with a Mixer account, you get a free subscription, so they're paying Ninja for the subscriptions, but now everyone has Mixer accounts. So for them, it made sense. And I've talked about this a lot this week, the Ninja moving to Mixer. I think it's fantastic. Well, it's good for him. I think it's also really good for the streaming community in general. And the reason for that is there's competition now. Whereas Mixer was a second-class citizen in the streaming community behind Twitch. YouTube gaming is second class. You look at Facebook, all of these were a step below. And only a name like Ninja is going to move the needle enough to make it
a little bit of
an impact.
Is really playing their cards is right, because Ninja first started with Halo. That's where Ninja started, and the new Halo's coming out pretty soon. And I'm pretty sure they're going to make it some sort of Mixer exclusive.
And I don't know, I agree with what Jopa said. I mean, it's, you know, competition breeds innovation.
Yeah.
But like, how pissed would you be if you were a Fortnite streamer on Mixer?
Oh, you just lost.
I'd be livid. I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll move to Facebook or YouTube or
maybe. But I've already seen he's already started hosting some of those people who were having no success. And so ultimately you have to try to capitalize on it by hoping the trickle down will help out, because if you have more viewers on the platform, that can only be a good thing. The downside is obviously that most people are going to watch Ninja, but he's not streaming all the time. And I think a big part of his deal, like Dr. Cuckoo was getting at, is that this is going to allow him to play other games more frequently. So if you are a Fortnite streamer, maybe more Fortnite viewers came over to Mixer, and if he's only streaming Fortnite 3 days a week, that leaves 4 days open to try to capture on that. So there's plenty to think about. I know the knee-jerk reaction is, oh, streamers are moving over to Mixer just to follow him along. and talking about how much he's getting paid, which is a tremendous amount. But at the end of the day, I think strategically, it was a good idea for Mixer, for Ninja himself. If he gets a guaranteed payday, that's something that almost no content creators have. So good for him for possibly also setting that precedent.
He's paid for having.
And it's been a catalyst for a lot. Like, I know a lot of other streamers that have simultaneously just kind of moved over. It kind of been like the catalyst for them to. Mm-hmm.
Well, since Ninja moved,
say goodbye.
Go ahead, Zana.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, it's kind of been the catalyst for people to say goodbye to Twitch for whatever reason, and try something new on Mixer. And a lot of people are, you know, kind of dipping their toe in it whilst also streaming on Twitch on other days. So, I mean, I think it's.
Yeah. I wonder if Lupo's going to switch over. Because Lupo and Ninja play a lot together.
So I don't know.
I don't think so. We've seen past cases like this. Like, you look at the Guardian Con crew. You have Kevin is on Mixer. You have Darkness, who's on Facebook. And then you have Broman and Gathalion and them and T-Rex and stuff, who are on Twitch. So changing up that platform is not a, like, co-streaming with folks on different platform is not a bad idea at all. Because now you're increasing an audience, because if you, there are certain sites that you can co-stream from and watch both streams. And basically that allows you to have two different audiences. And now maybe you get crossover appeal. Maybe you get people that'll go watch both that might have only been on one platform. So at the end of the day, if he gets offered a lot of money, I wouldn't say he wouldn't move. But I don't know if just because Ninja moves, that would be something that he would do, especially because he gets a lot of broadcasting gigs from Twitch with like the Fortnite tournaments and stuff like that. So that might not be something that he does, but I wouldn't be surprised if other big name streamers get offered contracts, if not from Mixer, then from YouTube or Facebook, to try to have a similar type of impact.
But yeah, so you know, if anyone's, you know, dipping their toe into Mixer or any other streaming platform, good luck, and we hope hope everyone, you know, finds their niche and whatnot. Did anyone else have any other quick gaming news before we move on to our Canuckable character analysis?
Just real quick, the cross save for Destiny 2 releases August 21st goes live.
Oh, that soon? I thought it was in like September.
Nope, August
coming up pretty soon.
Yep. They just announced that today.
Didn't they push Shadowkeep back?
Yeah, they pushed
October
it
1st.
October.
Yeah.
Do you think they pushed up the cross save as like a for appeasement? Or,
well, I think they wanted to
get. Or do you think they just pushed it up?
I think it was ready. I think they want, that's why.
Yeah, and I think they probably wanted to give them more time to work out the kinks when they launch cross-save to when it Shadowkeep launches. Because they're going to have a couple influxes of the player base. With cross-save, you're going to have kind of people signing up on different accounts. And then, obviously, when Shadowkeep hits and it goes free-to-play, you're going to have a huge influx of
with
players.
The new line.
Yeah, that was. So that was my next question. So it goes free to play when Shadowkeep drops.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, New Light comes out. Shadowkeep's still a paid DLC.
Right, but like the base,
the timing is the same.
But Vanilla Destiny 2 will be free to play.
Correct.
Yeah. With it's Vanilla Destiny 2 with all of the game modes and the strikes, but not the raids and the story missions of the later DLCs.
Yeah.
In the
yeah, everything until Forsaken will be included. So that means Curse of Osiris.
And is that going to be across all platforms or
across
just
all
PC?
Platforms?
Uh-huh. And Google Stadia.
Yeah. And all that's destinations, right, even the moon, is going to be available to play for free.
The Patrol Zone, yeah.
Yeah, the Patrol Zone.
Yeah, I guess I'll just download it on PC.
I think a lot of people will, and then if they find people,
I think this is the moment that the D2 PC players have kind of been waiting for.
100%.
You know,
yeah.
Because I had a copy of Vanilla D2 when it came free on Battle.net.
Oh, yeah. I didn't hop on that. I should have.
Now, here's my question. I've played on PS4 pretty much all of Destiny. Well, PS3 to PS4. Now I'm going to be migrating over to PC with my account. I'm going to do the cross save. I'm going to jump over to PC because it's way easier on everything. I don't need extra equipment to do anything. It's just, and it's gorgeous. But I pre-ordered the PC version of Shadowkeep. Now, when cross save comes out and I switch my account from PlayStation over to PC, is that going to recognize, like,
yeah,
that I already own the game, or am I going to have to buy it for $10 prior to Shadowkeep to run it on PC?
No, you'll have the, so basically you'll have the free game, you'll have everything unlocked, and then Shadowkeep. See, the one question I don't know is whether you'll have Forsaken on PC. That I don't think you'll have that.
If you don't, if you don't purchase it, you don't have it.
Yeah, so you won't have Forsaken, so you won't have those raids and such. But you will have, obviously, Shadowkeep and whatever you order there. And then also,
you'll have your gear, but you won't be able to play the old raids.
So, Forsaken, my Forsaken and Season Pass is going to stay on the PS4.
Yeah.
Correct. Yep.
But my account and whatever non-PlayStation exclusives is going to be on PC all the way up to... Well, that kind of
and when New Light comes out, there are no more exclusives. So whatever was PlayStation 4 exclusive gets released for everything else.
Yeah, like Wave Splitter, Broodhold, the Strike, all that stuff will be on Xbox and PC.
So they're kind of streamlining it, but they're making it kind of complicated right from the get-go. So like you mentioned, you have to work out the bugs.
Yeah, I think there was no easy way to do this, unfortunately, especially with them having to move to Steam as well. Like it's a big transition all around. So I'm sure that's a part of the issue.
Awesome. Well, without further ado, Dr. Goku, take us through Captain Canuck.
So Captain Canuck, okay. This character kind of came out of left field. I didn't know how many people knew of Captain Canuck, but I was so Captain Canuck was conceived in 1971 by cartoonist Ron Leishman and was shown to artist and writer Roger Comley. And the original name for the character was Captain Canada. But the pair thought that the name already existed, so they changed it to Captain Canuck. The first issue was only released in July of 1975 and had a 3-issue run. The character was born following a policy that was enacted by the Canadian government at the start of World War II called the War Measures Act, which barred non-essential foreign coming items into the country, which also limited comic books because most comics came from American publishers. This meant that the Canadian comic industry collapsed. This is where Captain Canuck came into existence in the mid-1970s to fill a void of a Canadian-made superhero. Ron Leishman only worked on the first issue due to him having to leave the country for 2 years to being Mormon because his faith asked him to share that particular part of him around the world. This left Comley to complete the following 2 issues of the original run. Due to the way the comics were made and the coloring process, which was very innovative at the time, it also made that the printing process was really expensive, and the series was canceled after the initial 3 issues. The 4th issue was only published in 1979 after securing more funding and an experienced business partner. This run went on to be 14 issues. Even though a 15th issue was completed, it never was released. And the comic ran into creative differences and ultimately stopped again in 1981, which also led to Comley being fired from his own company, a la Steve Jobs. There have been three people who have donned the red and white maple leaf costume of Captain Canuck: Tom Evans, Darren Oak, and David Semple. However, not much is known about any of their backstory due to them all being in a short, limited run. So the first and original Captain Canuck was Tom Evans, a native individual of Métis descent, a Canadian secret agent with the SISO, or CISO, the Canadian International Security Organization. He got his powers from extraterrestrials when he was leading a troop of Boy Scouts on a camping expedition. This heightened his strength, speed, intelligence, and endurance, similar to that of Captain America. The alien technology in his suit also provided him with the ability of flight, a force field, and personality-wise, he embodied many Canadian stereotypes, certainly the one of being polite. In the original story, set in 1993, Canada had become the world's greatest power. They use CISO to police the world and apprehend bad guys. In 1993, brought the return of Captain Canuck by Comley, but with a new hero wearing the red and white, Darren Oak. He was in Captain Canuck Reborn, which is a four-issue run, and was again canceled. 2004 brought a third iteration of the character with David Semple in the Captain Canuck Unholy War three-issue miniseries. The character is named after a real-life Canadian hero, a 22-year-old photography student who, while witnessing a mother and child getting attacked, tried to save them but ended up getting killed by multiple stab wounds in the process. The character was a RCMP officer inspired by the original Captain Canuck to don a costume and fight crime on his own terms. At the end of the third issue, Tom Evans urges David to return the mantle to him, and the fourth issue, which was released 3 years later, tries to reinforce the return of the mantle and Tom Evans using a time machine to get to this particular timeline. 2013 brought a modern reimagining of the character in a web series, which led to a 2015 release of a new version of Captain Canuck and reimagining of Tom Evans. While it tries to flesh out the story, it's still rather convoluted and confusing. Captain Canuck in the comics hasn't had much success, but he's better seen as a cultural icon for Canadians. He's been widely used in promotional material, once helped kick off Crime Stoppers Month in January 2016 to coincide with a new comic. He's often viewed as a Superman Captain America Canadian hybrid. The character is a national symbol, a role that the character takes seriously, embodying and representing the nobility of the Canadian spirit, which is determination, honesty, and compassion. I don't know what you what you've learned or known about this particular character throughout his 40-plus year, or almost 50-year run.
Well, he's kind of a fun character, because I feel like throughout his history, like, he's had this like internal tug of war with like fighting alongside other people and then coming to realize he works better alone, mm-hmm. kind of thing. And especially the most recent iteration, like the ensuing conflict he has with his brother is interesting as well.
Did any of you guys watch the web series?
I did not. I didn't have a chance to watch it.
They're two seasons, and they're like 5-minute long episodes. They're The animation isn't the best, but it kind of gives you a sense of the character as well.
Hmm.
So he's not part of the big two, but he's kind of part of the Canadian culture.
Yeah, it's not a character I'd ever heard about before Sentinel Dad sent me that the information. But at the same time, one of the best things about comics is learning about unknown characters, mm-hmm. and kind of finding out the quirks and the history and stuff. And seeing, especially you look back in the 70s when characters like this are created and how heavily they lean on stereotypes, mm-hmm. and how many of those stereotypes stick with the characters for so long. You look that across all comics, anyone created back then has a stereotype that you'll kind of laugh at. So that's interesting, and I'd be interested to find out how Canadians themselves view the evolution of the character over time.
Well, it's funny, like, you know, I as an avid comic book reader, I very much urge people to try out new comics they probably haven't heard of before. You know, give it a read at any, like, real comic book store. You know, like, you could sit there and read a couple pages and test it out. Like, hell, before the movies came out, if you were not a big comic book fan, you probably never heard of Guardians of the Galaxy before.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that had never heard of the Falcon before and stuff like that. So, I mean, but these are now properties that people love right now. Yeah, no, absolutely. And, like, you know, I remember it was, like, during the 2000s when that Watchmen movie came out. Like, before that, no one ever heard of it, but it's been around for a long time.
Yep.
And now, and I'm super excited for the Watchmen series on HBO series, coming out.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's gonna be so good. But no, I fully, you know, it's kind of, this will hook, line, and sinker this into our edutainment topic earlier. Like, go and give it a try, and go, if you're a comic book reader, go and pick up something that might look interesting to you that you might have never heard of.
Because Captain Canuck, like, doesn't really have the staying power that a lot of the bigger heroes have, just because the way he's been written over these past years, like I mentioned, is extremely convoluted.
Right, no, and like that's another thing, is that, like, stories don't have to last forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to read or watch a story that's just for this small window, and you can still take something away from it, and you can still enjoy it again at another date, another time. Mm-hmm.
And,
you know,
and most Canadians see Captain Canuck more as kind of that cultural icon. So he's kind of the first Canadian superhero, and Right. The merchandise is so Canadian. You can get Captain Canuck maple syrup. Yes, that is a thing.
So, okay. You leave it on, like, your doorstep, or, like, when he saves you, it's like, oh, here, I happen to have a thing of, you know, or is it,
Many questions.
He's there handing you a bottle of his own maple syrup while drinking out of a Captain Canadian, like pint glass or something like that.
Some old bat blue.
Chug. No.
Best superhero ever. Awesome. Well, Dadio, I'm glad, whether you were serious or not, when you hypothesized him in the Discord chat where we organized the podcast. I'm very glad you took us through that.
I'm always interested in learning about characters that are kind of lesser known. Because Captain Canuck, I haven't read much about him.
I hadn't thought about or read his stuff in a long time, so I appreciate you going through all that. Awesome. Joe, do we have any community news?
Not much really going on right now, but I do want to do a shout-out from all of us to Captain Twaz. He just released yesterday his own clothing line. It's called Endgame.
So good.
Street Gear. It's phenomenal. It all looks great. It dropped. I think majority of it sold out already. But he's really a fantastic part of the Destiny community. He's also done a lot of the graphics and work for GuardianCon since, I think it was 2016 to present.
So he's been behind that, designing that. You can see his work all throughout Marvel, Adidas, everything. He's one of the nicest people in the world too, and he's so loving of the community. But he made his own clothing line. I'm so happy for him that's successful and doing great, and people are asking for Drop 2, which is the next series of clothing he's releasing. It's just some really cool gear, really high quality stuff, and check it out.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, that kind of wraps us up this week. Good show. But before we get going with all our little announcements and whatnot, Diopa, where can people find you on the internet, and where can people find out about your stream and the days you stream for Planet Destiny and all those wonderful places you do so?
I am very fortunate to have my name, Diopa Writes, all across Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, all the good stuff. Same name, uniform across. Twitter is probably the way you'll find most of my advertising, letting you know what's going live when. I'm pretty active over there, but yeah, pretty simple.
Awesome. And if people see you at a convention, will you buy them a beer?
Oh, of course. A big hug, too. I'm a big hugger, so.
A hug and a beer. Awesome. Well, again, Joe, but thank you so much for that we finally got you on, and we can't wait to have you back again, which we hope you will accept that invitation. But yeah, thank you all for joining the project this week. You can reach us on Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, Facebook. You can email us, all the places. Just search us as Project Guardians. We have a very awesome and supportive Discord with mental health resources there, self-help resources. We have mental health professionals in there if you want to talk to someone. If you need to find mental health help in your local area, we have resources for that and people that can point you in the right direction. And there's all, we have LFG channels in there too. If you play video games, because we play video games, we'll play video games with you. You can also find all that lovely information on our awesome website, projectguardians.org. Our Discord link is in there. It's also pinned to our Twitter and all those wonderful places. Catch us on iTunes, Podbean, everywhere you listen to podcasts. Write us a review. That'd be cool. Or you don't. You don't have to, like, at all. If there's a mental health topic you want us to cover and talk about, if there's someone really awesome you think we should have on the show, especially if you're a mental health professional, if you're a psychiatrist, psychologist, PA, psychiatric nurse, all those things, let us know. We'd love to have you on. But again, thank you for joining us this week. Dr. Goku, where can people find you? Thank you. Wonderful Canadianness on the internet.
They can find me anywhere at SSJ5Goku28.
Awesome. Joe, you, where? Internet.
You can find me all over the Twitter sphere, doing the tweeters and the Twitters. Average Joe, ABG Joe, 227, or in 5,261 Discord channels.
I thought you were about to sing the chorus from Rent.
I can. Let me pull up the lyrics.
525,600 minutes. Sorry.
It's disturbing, you know that.
It's a great show. Everyone should watch Rent at one point or another in their life. Brother Dave isn't here. You can find him all the places. Hatchy Dave. MySpace, Farmers Only. I like helicopters that go boom.com, all those places. You find him, he'll be there. He's working nights, so we'll see him in like a month or two. He'll be back. We can't wait to have him back for those Hatchy Dave moments. He's like one of those people that, like, he might not talk all the time, but when he does, you listen. It's like Gary Cooper. And I'm Sentinel Dad, also known as Alex. You can find me everywhere on the internet. Just search for Sentinel Dad on Twitter, extra D on the end. I stream some stuff too sometimes over on Twitch, so just search me up or don't. That's cool too. But again, thank you all for joining the project this week. And we will see you. We're actually going to be on next week. We normally do every 2 weeks, but next week we have a really awesome special guest. I'm not going to tell you who it is because we're going to put it on. You got to follow us and look at it on Twitter, and you'll be very excited. But that is all. Thank you for joining, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.